Good evening, Ketchikan and Southern Southeast Alaska. Welcome to Book Talk. My name is Charlotte Glover, and I'll be your host for the next half hour, bringing you the best in books from the Ketchikan Public Library. Good evening and welcome to Book Talk for Thursday, February the 16th. The library is closed for inventory. Let me tell you, you're not missing a whole lot except a bunch of straggly-looking librarians with barcode readers in their hands beeping, beep, beep, beep. And we're making good progress. We always find lots of things on the shelves that are a little bit amiss. Sometimes a cataloging record is wrong. Sometimes, you know, the book has the right spine label, but the wrong author in the computer, or sometimes there's a book on the shelf that's still checked out to someone. We hate that, but it happens. Anyway, we end up with piles of things to fix, little things to fix, and so we're hoping to be back to normal on Saturday. We'll be open from 10 to 6. Remember, you don't accrue fines or have due dates when we are closed, and so all of your books or movies can't be due before the 18th when we reopen. You get a little grace period. So just hang on to those materials. We really don't have the space for them, nor do we have the staff time right now to wand them in. We're wanding everything else in the library, and we can't do check-ins until inventory is done anyway. So it really, really helps us if you hang on to your materials. And we'll see you on Saturday. Saturday, we're going to make some Frito pie with the kids during Kids Cook. This was a childhood favorite of mine. Growing up in New Mexico, there are places where you can rip open a bag of Fritos, like Woolworths in downtown Santa Fe, and they'll pour chili over them. We used to have it in school for school lunch. We're going to make Emeril Lagasse's chili dog chili, like, for lack of a better word. He makes just some fantastic recipes in his children's cookbooks. If you haven't come down and look at those books, he's got one called Hey, There's a Chef in My Family, a couple of others. Everything I've ever cooked from them has been outstanding, and several recipes have become family favorites. Well, his chili for chili dogs is one of those family favorites, and we're going to use that for the Frito pie using Emeril Lagasse's chili. So we're going to have some fun with that. It's mostly a cooking demonstration. You know, we don't have a fancy kitchen. We're not the Food Network. But we talk to the kids about the ingredients. They get to help a little bit, and then we get to taste the food. And that is a drop-in program, 3 o'clock, Saturday, February 18th. February 23rd, we're continuing our family night series for the year. Beginning at 5:30, you can come to the library for an early childhood program, pizza, dinner, and a free book. This is our fifth year of doing family night. And space is limited, though, so you have to pick up a free ticket in advance at the library. This month, the library will welcome BMI Joshua Bartlett, MKI Chris Taylor, and FN Aiden Letty from the Coast Guard, who will talk about boating safety for kids. And then Saturday, February 25th, the Teen Advisory Group will meet at 2 p.m. in the Adult Library. And Monday, the 27th, the Ketchikan Garden Club will meet in the Children's Annex. And we've got more information about that. Then please, please mark your calendars for Wednesday, February 29th at 6:30. I promise we'll have you out good and early. But you've got to come meet Sneed Colliard, who is a Missoula, Montana science and nature writer. He's a biologist by background. He has traveled all over the world researching his books, such as A Whale Biologist at Work, Science Warriors, The Battle Against Invasive Species, Reign of the Sea Dragons, books about animal teeth, animal wings, books about birds of prey, marsupials. And then he's got some new fiction that he's been working on, including two Slate Stevens mysteries, a novel called Dog Sense, another novel called Double Eagle, and one called Flashpoint. He's written over 50 books for young people, and he's a heck of a great guy, and I hope that you will come out and meet him. Let's make him feel welcome, as Ketchikan is the last stop on his statewide tour, and we don't want to be the place that nobody came to meet the cool science author, really. I've seen him speak. His slides are incredible. So make a point to come out and see this one. all kinds of stuff in my book bag here today. So we're just going to dive right in to many, many random bits of information. And up first from Powell's Bookstore in Oregon, the 2012 Pudley Awards. Now, what are the Pudleys? These are books that the users of Powell's in Portland and the Powell's.com website have voted on as being their favorites. These are customer favorites from Powell's and Powell's.com. The 2012 Pudley Award for Fiction, The Help by Catherine Stockett. Customers said it's the birth of yet another American classic. I fell in love with the book. I loved every minute of this page-turner. This one's a keeper. I promise you won't be disappointed. Amen to that. Great, great read. And a fantastic movie. The 2012 Pudley Award for Nonfiction, Laura Hildenbrand's Unbroken. Also an incredible, incredible book. Then I printed off a bunch. I think this is just the fiction. No, it's fiction and nonfiction. So I see how it goes. Unbroken is number 6 on the list, and so it got the most votes for nonfiction. Looking at the top 10, this is what Powell's customers loved this year. The Help was number 1. The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern was number 2. One man said, even though my wife cautions me against using superlatives, this was the most imaginative novel I have ever read. Hunger Games, number 3. The novel quickly moved from young adult to the head of modern dystopian literature. Boy, amen to that. Everybody's reading The Hunger Games, including my 11-year-old right now. I told him it'd be a little intense and maybe too grown up for him. That's all he needed to hear was, okay, Mom thinks I'm not old enough to read this. He's diving right in. Just, you know, little parenting tip there. I'm sure it'll be fine. It's an artfully done book. State of Wonder by Ann Patchett, number 4. Cutting for Stone, Abraham Verghese at 5. Unbroken, Laura Hildenbrand at 6. The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. There's a book club favorite by Rebecca Skloot about a woman whose cancer cells were actually used in the biotech industry and the pharmaceutical industry without her knowledge. Rebecca Skloot knocked my socks off with this book, says one reader. The story itself encompasses human tragedy, injustice, and bravery against a backdrop of science. Stephen King, 11/22/63, was number 8 among customer favorites. Number 9, 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami. And number 10, The Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss. And then we'll just dive in. The Art of Fielding, Chad Harbuck at 11. The Tiger's Wife, Taya Obrecht at 12. A Dance with Dragons, George R. R. Martin at 13. Ready Player One at 14 by Ernest Klein. And Room, Emma Donoghue at 15. So you can see the whole list of Pudley Award winners at www.powells.com, and I'm just quickly going over my printout here to see a number of George R. R. Martin titles jump out at me. See if there's anything else of great, great interest. It's pretty much what you'd expect people are reading if you've been to a bookstore lately. You'll be familiar with all of these titles. So congratulations to the winners, Catherine Stockett for The Help and Laura Hildenbrand for Unbroken. Just one of many awards and popular acclaim these two books have received. Moving right along to our Seattle Times local books roundup. New and local books, meaning the Pacific Northwest region, Farming Life in Adams County, Governing in Washington State, and Brain Fitness for Women. New releases, Drylands, a Rural American Saga from University of Nebraska Press. This is a pictorial essay chronicling the farming life in eastern Washington's Adams County, where life still runs on the annual rhythm of cultivation, planting, harvest, and marketing, even as towns shrink and farmsteads are abandoned. It's by a photojournalist, Lionel Devine, who lives in Massachusetts, and writer Steve Turner, who lives in Santa Cruz. Governing Washington, Politics and Government in the Evergreen State, a collection of essays on government in Washington State, edited by Cornell Clayton and Nicholas Loverich. Brain Fitness for Women, Keeping Your Head Clear and Your Mind Sharp at Any Age, Sandra Kornblatt. She's a Seattle-based health writer who examines how hormones, the environment, exercise, stress, food, aging, and even friendship affect the brain, and offers tips for women on keeping the brain on its metaphorical tiptoes. So, brainfitnessforwomen.com. And Gabriel Von Max, Joanne Bernie Dunker, a book based on the recent exhibition at Seattle's Frey Art Museum featuring the works of Von Max, whose paintings reflected his preoccupations with parapsychology, Darwinism, anthropology, philosophy, and mysticism. And he's the director of the Frey. So how about that? There's always new books coming out about our region, and if you'd like to receive that list, just get onto the Seattle Times for news source, northwestsource.com/html/books, and ask for a subscription. It's pretty fun. Another email that I get so many emails from book people, book news, the book world, but I love ABE. As you know, Abe Books, ABE Books, and that's the great used and rare book center on the internet where booksellers congregate to tell you what they have for sale. Well, they keep a list of their most expensive sales, and they had another landmark rare book sale. First edition, signed first edition of Casino Royale by Ian Fleming, was sold for $46,453, so that's a lot of money for a James Bond book. Woohoo! Carta Extitoria de Higualda Orteada por Felipe en favor de Rodrigo Gallego by Ejecutoria, yada yada. It's a document. It is a letter confirming the nobility of Rodrigo Gallego. It includes 42 leaves of the beautiful plant motif, $9,501. Published in 1570, though. Did I tell you that? Lysistrata by Aristophanes, published in 1934 by the Limited Editions Club and illustrated by none other than Pablo Picasso. The book was limited to 1,500 copies. That's one reason it's rare. And signed by Picasso. Der Steppenwolf, Hermann Hesse, 6597, first edition, written in German. Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, 6500. It's the first UK edition, published in 1932, inscribed by Aldous Huxley. Marcel Proust's Le Recherche du Temps Perdu, la la la, 5876 there, 5876. Le Fleur du Monde, Charles Baudelaire, 5502. Bergomatic's Lexicon by Ambrogio Calepino, 5237. Remarkable Dictionary of the Latin Language. About that. Oh, more French. Sigh. Voyages pittoresques et romantiques dans l'ancienne France. Dans l'ancienne. There you go. Something about ancient France. I got that. Pictures of a voyage. A romantic voyage. There you go. Pictures of a romantic voyage to ancient France. I think that's the title. Two volumes published between 1820 and 1825. 235 pages. Ah, finally, something in English. Crime and Punishment, Fyodor Dostoevsky. The first appearance of his classic in English, 1886, the U.S. first edition for $5,000. So hang on to those classics, especially signed. They could be worth a lot of money, but you won't be reading them in Arizona if Senate Bill 1467 passes. Things are getting even weirder in Arizona, according to my friends in the library community. A new bill in Arizona seeking to impose harsh restrictions on teachers' conduct, even in their own homes. Senate Bill 1467 states that educators at the state's public schools and universities can be fined, suspended, and ultimately fired if they, quote, engage in speech or conduct that would violate the standards adopted by the Federal Communications Commission concerning obscenity, indecency, and profanity if that speech or conduct were broadcast on television or radio. Now, we all know from George Carlin what we can't say, right? That does a great deal to limit what can be taught in classrooms. Banning books is certainly not a new practice, but this law would cover far more than controversial books. Some of the books that that would be outlawed in Arizona classrooms would include the Collegiate Dictionary from Merriam-Webster, Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye, Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, The Catcher in the Rye, Geoffrey Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales, The Kite Runner. We could go through them and tell you the naughty bits, but anyway, trust me, they're there. And just forget about reading them in high school in Arizona. Worse, as Angus Johnson notes, the bill is so ineptly drafted it could intrude deeply into teachers' private lives. Senate Bill 1467 doesn't just ban public speech or conduct, but all speech and conduct. That means public school teachers in Arizona will be forbidden from engaging in any FCC-regulated activities, no matter where they are. That means no sex, no going to the bathroom, no cursing, and no showering, ever. This is crazy. You cannot make this stuff up. One of the bill's five sponsors, State Senator Lori Klein, has some experience in the national spotlight. Last summer, she raised eyebrows when, during an interview with a reporter from the Arizona Republic, she took out a loaded handgun and pointed it at the reporter's chest. And in the middle of Herman Cain's sexual harassment scandal, Klein dismissed the allegations against Cain because he'd never been anything but a gentleman to her. She said, quote, "and I am not an unattractive woman," unquote. Okay, that's government at its finest there. So, you know, no swearing at home once you're a school teacher in the Arizona public school systems if this bill passes. And boy, Big Brother's going to be telling you what books to teach. Things are just loony-toony down there right now. I'm kind of surprised they're not asking for a modesty clause. Didn't you have to sign that about 100 years ago about the length of your skirts? And I'm sure that there's more restrictions they could pass to be a school teacher in Arizona, because I'm sure that people are flocking there now to teach in their school districts as it is. And, you know, I'm sure they have an abundance of candidates who can't wait to, you know, wear high collars and long skirts. I mean, is this nuts or what? Okay, back to the modern world where we wear jeans, because, you know, we're doing inventory this week, just to tell you. No long skirts in my library. We trip over them. It's bad enough we have all the cords for the barcode readers right now. But yeah, boy, we could come up with a list. Why don't you start a list? I'll start one. We'll come up with a list of all of our favorite books that have swear words in them, starting with one of my all-time favorites, Bridge to Terabithia by the great Catherine Patterson, which is regularly banned because someone's father says a swear word in the scene where his car won't start in the morning, and he's very poor, and he's a little ticked off about the car not starting, something like that. I think it's the only word in the book that is, of course, about a great friendship and the death of a young friend that is, quote-unquote, objectionable. But the book gets banned regularly, even though it's one of the greatest pieces of literature ever written for young people, or any people. Catherine Patterson is a genius. Why don't you just get a pair of scissors and cut out the part you don't want to read? I don't understand these people. But Fun times. Well, back to the Pacific Northwest, one of the most successful writers who's gaining recognition from the Pacific Northwest is Kristen Hanna, and her latest book is on fire right now and going to be her biggest seller. This is from Bethesda, Maryland, though, where she is on tour. Kristen Hanna knows what women want in fiction. With her best-selling novels about strong women facing down whatever life throws at them, Kristen Hanna makes her fans cry, and they love her for it. Her writing literally makes me bawl, says Christy Elkemeyer, 29, a first-grade teacher in suburban Maryland. Hanna's one of her favorite authors because she doesn't sugarcoat things. She's very realistic. On a recent frosty night in this Washington suburb, Hanna, 51, draws a crowd of nearly 100 like-minded women hungry for the novelist's dramatic, issue-driven fiction to Barnes & Noble. It's the same female readership that's made Jodi Picoult a publishing superstar. Though there was the occasional husband in the audience, the crowd was overwhelmingly female and fanatic about Hanna, the author of 19 novels. In her latest, Homefront, Hannah offers a heart-wrenching tale about a female Army helicopter pilot deployed to Iraq. The heroine, Jolene, is torn between her duty as a soldier and her obligations to her husband and their two young daughters. Homefront made its debut last week at number 7 on USA Today's best-selling book list. The first time Hannah has cracked the top 10. And towards the end of this longer story, Hannah explained why she told the audience that Homefront changed her more than any other book. "I was woefully uninformed about the daily sacrifices people in the military make," she says. "Spending time with a female Army helicopter pilot in Washington State left her much more patriotic." But while it explores hot-button topics such as mothers in combat and post-traumatic stress disorder, the novel puts its real focus on the heroine and the emotional bonds she makes and breaks as a daughter, a wife, a mother, a friend, and a soldier. Says Hannah, "I'm endlessly fascinated by the relationships that define us." So Homefront by Kristen Hannah, burning up the charts here. And looking at USA Today's list of paperbacks, hardcovers, fiction, and nonfiction, I don't see where it is. It's number 25 this week, 7 last week. So it's we need to get out there and support Kristen Hannah. Hunger Games still at number 1. Vince Flynn's Kill Shot at 2. Catching Fire. Susan Collins at 4. Lisa Gardner's Catch Me at 5. And I want to get onto our book here, so I'm going to just skip the rest of that. Michael Morpurgo is becoming a household name in America after the success of his film War Horse that Steven Spielberg made. He's a British author, and he's the third children's laureate from Great Britain. Went to private schools in England and was in the military, taught rugby. He became a school teacher. He's been writing just forever, and I was just unfamiliar with him until War Horse, which was a battle of the books title here in Alaska. My son read that, and then when I was in Seattle at Secret Garden Books in December, I picked up his latest, An Elephant in the Garden, because I love the cover, and I have a policy of buying a book whenever I go to an independent bookstore. And this was the one that just caught my eye. Set during the bombing of Dresden in World War II, inspired by the true story of a zookeeper who took charge of a young baby elephant during the war, walked it home at night to keep it safe in their garden, and then that same elephant helped to save their lives as the city was being evacuated. And Michael Morpurgo said this book was inspired by historical facts and by his admiration for the animals he calls the noblest and wisest and most sensitive of all creatures. And it brings together an unlikely group of ragtag survivors looking for a new start after World War II. This is a children's book, An Elephant in the Garden. It is charming. It is a beautifully written book. From the first page, I was so happy that I'd purchased it. And I can't wait to read more books by Michael Morpurgo. He's clearly a classic storyteller and an elegant, elegant writer. So let me just give you a page or two here in the time we have left. Chapter 1. "To tell the truth, I don't think Lizzie would ever have told us her elephant story at all if Carl had not been called Carl. Maybe I'd better explain. I'm a nurse. I was working part-time in an old people's nursing home just down the road from where we live. It was part-time because I wanted to be home for Carl, my 9-year-old son. There were just the two of us, so I needed to be there to see him off to school and be there for him when he got back. But sometimes on weekends, they asked me to do overtime. I couldn't always say no. We had to take our turn to do weekend duties, and if I'm honest, the money helped. So on weekends, if Carl hadn't got anywhere else to go or anyone else to look after him, they let me bring him into work with me. I was a bit worried about it at first, whether anyone would mind, how he'd get on with the old folks. But he loved it, and as it turned out, so did they. For a start, he had the whole park to play around in. Sometimes he'd bring a few friends. They could climb the trees, kick a football about, whiz around on their mountain bikes. As for the old folks, the children's visits became quite a feature of their weekends, something for them to look forward to. They would gather around the sitting room windows to watch them, often for hours on end. And when it was raining, Carl and his friends used to come inside and play chess with them or watch a film on television. Then just a couple of weeks ago, on a Friday night, it snowed and snowed hard. I had to go to work at the nursing home the next day. I was on morning shifts that weekend, so Carl had to come too. But he didn't mind, not one bit. He brought half a dozen of his friends along with him. They were going tobogganing in the park, they said. They didn't have a toboggan between them. They simply brought along anything that would slide. Plastic sacks, surfboards, even a rubber ring. As it turned out, bottoms worked just as well as anything else. The nursing home was loud with laughter that morning as the old folks watched them gallivanting out there in the snow. In time, the tobogganing degenerated into a snowball fight, which the old folks seemed to be enjoying as much as Carl and his friends were. I was busy most of the morning, but the last time I looked out the window, I saw that, much to everyone's delight, Carl and his friends were busy building a giant snowman right outside the sitting room window. So I was taken completely by surprise when I walked into Lizzie's room a few minutes later and found Carl sitting there at her bedside in his hat and coat, the two of them chatting away like old friends. "Oh, so there you are," Lizzie said, beckoning me in. "You did not tell me you had a son, and he's called Carl. I can hardly believe it. And he looks like him, too. The likeness, it is extraordinary, amazing. I've told him also about the elephant in the garden, and he believes me." She wagged her finger at me. "You do not believe me. I know this. No one in this place believes me, but Carl does." I hustled Carl out of the room and away down the corridor, chewing him out soundly for wandering into Lizzie's room like that, uninvited. Thinking back, I suppose I shouldn't have been surprised. Carl was always wandering off. What did surprise me, though, was how furious he was with me. "She was going to tell me about her elephant," he protested loudly, tugging at my hand, trying to break away from me. "There isn't any elephant, Carl," I told him. "She imagines things. Old people often do that. They get a bit mixed up in the head sometimes. That's all. Now come along, for goodness sakes." It wasn't until we were back home that afternoon that I had a chance to sit Carl down and explain all about Lizzie and her elephant story. Well, Carl's the smart one there because he listens to Lizzie, and it turns out that she did have an elephant in her garden. As I said, her mother was a zookeeper. She is waiting for her husband to come home from the war, takes charge of this elephant. Lizzie and her younger brother Carl are helping her to keep the elephant safe in their garden when Dresden is bombed, and they decide to go overland to some relatives' homes to seek safety and food, and then also to make their way to the American army, who is coming towards Germany, as well as the Russians, I believe. Anyway, this is a lovely family story about faith and hope and perseverance, and about caring for all living creatures. And it's so readable. It just zooms right along. It's about 170 pages of nice big type. Be a great read aloud for a 4th, 5th, 6th grade class as well, or nice, thoughtful, perceptive 9, 10, 11-year-old. Really, really a beautifully written, interesting book based on some historical facts and some family history that he kind of merged together. A master storyteller. I can't wait to read more books by Michael Morpurgo, the best-selling author of War Horse, Running Wild, Casper, and he's a member of the British Empire. Did I tell you that? An Elephant in the Garden. Hey, that's it for Book Talk for this evening. Thanks so much for joining me. I'll be back again next week with more books. And meanwhile, hold on to your library materials. We'll be open Saturday. Stay tuned right here to KRBD Ketchikan, your community-supported Coast Alaska station for southern southeast Alaska. We've got news from National Public Radio and then Babblefish on this Thursday evening. Good night.